everyone, and welcome to Playwright, a podcast about creating and sharing new ways to play. My name is Ryan Heyman, also called H.
And I'm Ryan Quintel, also called Q. H, I have a question for you.
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever worked on a project that when you read the article that Kotaku did about Anthem made you feel like, oh, that reminds me of this project that I've worked on before?
I've been lucky enough to be kind of in really well-run groups. So, you know, not specifically, of course, we all have moments of chaos, especially in school. But, you know, for the most part, in my professional life, I've been very lucky.
That is so good because I feel similarly, but I have had one particular project, and I won't name names to protect the party involved, where I was like, oh my God, I know exactly how the developers of that game must feel, especially as they deal with people going, well, why didn't you do this? And what the heck? And all of that sort of stuff. So, my condolences and feelings and shout outs to everybody that worked on Anthem and really tried to get those messages up the chain and just couldn't make it happen.
That's right. It you know, there's so much, they call it what, Monday morning quarterbacking? Is that what the term is? A sports term. So I'm only kind of vaguely familiar with it. But, you know, we do this within the gaming community all the time. And I mean, that's kind of the whole point of this show almost is, you know, sometimes we remix other ideas and try to improve upon things or try to take them in different directions. But of course, we're not here saying that we could do a better job. We're here saying, like, wouldn't it be fun to explore? But yeah, there's a million things that go wrong during game development. There's some of those things end up taking it in new directions that were unexpected and unplanned for and ultimately positive, as we've heard numerous times. And sometimes they don't end up working out. But, you know, that's the way that it's always going to be. And that's part of what makes it exciting and fun.
It's true. And by the way, since we were last together, at some point we will have to talk about Satisfactory, because that sounds like a Ryan Q game to the max. I don't know if you've seen anything about it, but boy, oh boy, Satisfactory, very, very cool looking. I'm excited to try it.
You're like a hop on Steam these days, and there's always a few games that pop out. Be like, yeah, this seems like the kind of thing that you'd be into.
You know what? You're not going to find it on Steam. It is an Epic Store exclusive. Are you happy about that?
I don't mind. Yeah, sure.
Yeah, you know what? I'm not bothered by it either, but it seems to make some people pretty upset.
Very angry for some reason.
No! I have to download this thing that's free.
It doesn't let me cloud backup my saves.
That's right.
Deal with it, brother. No cloud backups on the PlayStation 1 back in my day.
That's right. Yeah, God forbid I had cloud backups for my Super Nintendo. I wouldn't have lost all those hours. I could prove to you people that I've beaten these games.
But unfortunately, you are now relegated to the status of a fake gamer.
It's true. That's true. And I'm happy to be here. I'm Ryan Quintel, happy to be here. Fake gamer, everybody.
All right, well, why don't you put your money where your mouth is and give us a fake game?
Well, here's my fake game pitch this week, although the community is welcome to turn it into a real game. It's kind of a proto pitch. I don't know if it's a complete thought and idea, but I want to talk about it and see if it goes somewhere. I really would like to have something that feels like either a Splinter Cell-esque stealth action game, or maybe it could be as simple as like a stealth platformer where you have four directions you can move your character: left, right, forward, and back. Very sort of non-analog, sort of eight-way movement, and or four-way movement, I guess, in that case. And as you do move, really all you can see, all the environment shows, is your silhouette and the silhouette of the enemies in the level. So you move around, and as you move, say, further away or closer, your silhouette gets smaller, or maybe the angle of it changes. You are therefore kind of able to sort of morph and contort your body as you're stealthing around, but the impact of, say, grabbing a bad guy or doing a stealth takedown still feels like it's physically connected to what your silhouette is doing. So you're kind of moving around. You're never actually seeing the protagonist. You're only seeing the shadow that they cast.
All right. Very cool. We're starting now. As we're describing this kind of 2D silhouette, like, are we looking at this from like a side-on perspective, or is this a 3D thing?
So, yeah, I guess like I could imagine it being 3D.
All right. So that's interesting. So it's kind of a baking down of the 3D information into ultimately like 2D shapes in the kind of way that maybe like an ape out would be.
Yeah. I was definitely thinking about ape out very recently when I was like, oh, that's kind of cool. It's almost what I'm thinking, but imagine, I think you could pull off the same level of simplicity and the same level of visceral sort of connection between the silhouettes. But one thing that I really sort of enjoy, and I was trying to find YouTube videos that sort of reference this, and I think weirdly, Alicia Keys had a performance of New York, her song. It was all done with people dancing on a silhouette screen, and as they changed the light and who's further and further away from the light, they did everything from making it look like a person was being picked up by a very large human hand. And I really was like, wouldn't it be cool to have something where, rather than like ducking to get through a little crevice or something, you could like actually just kind of move away from the light, shrink your silhouette, and fit in that way.
Yeah, there's a game I wanted to call attention to called Unworthy, which is kind of a Dark Souls-y type of game. It's in 2D, but it is like every character is in silhouette. I don't think it plays around with any of the kind of like shadow mechanics like you're talking about, though.
Oh, I think I saw that. It looks cool.
Mm, yeah, yeah. There's also a few... it's kind of a level variant that you see from time to time where, you know, the level will be behind some kind of a screen, like in Yoshi's Crafted World. Most recently, there was one in a Japanese house with one of those paper screen walls, and a lot of the action would happen behind that. And it was up to you to kind of like guess what the objects that you were seeing are based on how they move and how you interact with them.
I really like that sort of playing with light and playing with the physical shape of the character. And I started to think like, how surreal could you get? Could you get, maybe this is a karate master and as they put themselves into crane form or something, you can actually take on the characteristics of the animals that you're making silhouettes of. And so you can almost transform your shape, but it would evoke the animal and it would move like the animal and the control scheme would change, but you could also kind of tell that it was a human body that is kind of in this position. So like trying to evoke that sort of realism, but also give the ability of like the transforming protagonist.
All right, so like shadow puppets then.
Yeah, yeah, totally. I was thinking about, I watched a lot of shadow puppet videos when I was thinking about this pitch.
So maybe like when you hold a certain pose for a certain amount of time, then it kind of locks in and you become whatever animal you are posed as. It wouldn't be free form. It would be, you know, obviously a combination of buttons or something, but it would be cool if there was some sort of an analog element to it. Like if you can control your limbs or whatever through some of the analog inputs, like the triggers and the thumb pads.
Yeah. And it was hard for me because I was thinking about, oh, I would love to be able to actually just make your character a hand that gets like closer and further away. And you're controlling the little digits and turning it into mm-hmm. different creatures that way. And as you were able to, but I couldn't think of what kind of controller I could do that with. I was like, even the Oculus Touch controller. And I had the pleasure of using the Oculus Touch controllers and playing Beat Saber over my little vacation. That
nice.
What a game. I'm getting yeah, an Oculus yeah. very soon. Yeah. And I was like, man, even that touch controller really couldn't do the individual finger digit thing. So I don't know, how could we solve that problem?
I mean, ideally the whatever the one Valve is developing, the Knuckle controller, should be able to get you there, but again, that's like a very limited use case of people have to have this very specific technology. I think that there are ways around that. If you're just controlling a hand, kind of like a is it Cousin It that's the hand, or is that the hairy fellow from you're the one who just bought an Addams Family game, so
I think Thing, that's Thing is the
actually.
Hand.
Yeah.
Yeah,
Thing is the hand, right? So you can do it like that, kind of like Glover on the N64. or if there's almost enough manual inputs on the, I mean, it could be like a surgeon simulator type of thing as well. That would be difficult to control, but you know, like Glover, like I was mentioning.
Just imagine like if you had a couple basic bindings. So like the right trigger or like Z or whatever we call it, it can kind of maybe separate your middle finger and index finger. And then the L could separate your pinky and your ring finger, and different like button combos and permutations could get different fingers to sort of stay with each other. And then the two joysticks themselves can articulate wherever the point of separation is. It's very, it's a little complex, but it's interesting.
So you'd be kind of like locking in, it's kind of like Octodad in a way where you have to, the control sticks individually move the limbs, and then you use the triggers to kind of swap between controlling the legs and controlling the arms, I believe.
Yeah, I think that would be interesting. Now, you'd also kind of have to do it in a way where the shadow is giving you pretty real-time feedback, right? But also making you feel like you're in the midst of the transformation, because I don't want the default hand state to feel totally useless.
So let's get back to this whole shadow light type of dynamic here. Maybe the entire game takes place. I feel like I've seen this kind of thing in like an IKEA before, but maybe not. Like I'm thinking of like a lamp in the middle of the screen, essentially, and then kind of a paper screen that like wraps around it.
Yes.
So, and then the action can kind of take place, and you get the kind of curvature of that space. And there are ways that you can maybe, as the actual human in the room, like manipulate the light so that it shines in different ways or cast different colors. You can make certain colored platforms disappear, kind of like you could in Runbow. There's lots of ways that you can affect the game world by interacting with the light itself.
You know what? I think, too, that would be really cool to just go all the way with that aesthetic and have the game take place on like a little bit of a micro scale or something, and have it feel like a play dead game. I think they're the inside people, right?
Yeah, right.
Make it very silhouette-y, make it take place inside of a Japanese rice paper lamp, I think is the thing that you're referencing. Yeah, levels could be, they could form all the different like lamp sort of sizes and shapes. So you actually get something that feels like that, I think the third or fourth Geometry Wars game where you're like moving across these surfaces.
What was always so cool in the old platformer games, like the coolest thing that they were all doing was like wrapping a level around a cylinder because, you know, back then it's like, whoa, it's 3D. I can't believe it.
I got that super effects chip.
Yeah, but maybe like doing the opposite where you're on the inside of a cylinder this time and, you know, finding ways to platform up or down or all around, and it can kind of, the level could be rewritten as you're going around the cylinder. But anyways, that's all the time we have on that one. So let's close it down. Let's come up with a name. Let's illuminate a name for ourselves.
I wonder if there's just straight up a name for the Japanese lamps. So they're called Akari Light Sculptures. Akari does already sound like the name of a game, right?
Let's go now to my pitch today. And I'm piggybacking off of yours from last week, in which we talked about a fighting game in which you could replace the limbs of your fighter to kind of give yourself a power up, but you are conversely trading off the health bar is dictated by how much human parts you have left on your body. And so I want to take that overall idea and kind of meld it into a like a Sekiro Dark Souls style adventure game where it's about cutting off limbs and specifically targeting certain limbs. Every fight kind of evolves as it goes on. And like last week's idea, you can replace your own limbs with more durable or useful limbs, but your total health is proportionate to how many human parts remain. And, you know, I want to kind of channel some of those elements that have been in the Dark Souls series before. Demon Souls introduced the idea of not receiving full health when you respawn. You are at half health at all times unless you are wearing the appropriate ring, or once you beat a boss, then you kind of reawaken to full health for a little while until you die again. Dark Souls 2 had a system that penalized you more and more with lesser and lesser health every time that you died, with, of course, rings to kind of mitigate that as well. And then Sekiro has some interesting changes to the fighting mechanics, where there's these kind of competing health bars of the actual, like, enemy's health, and then their balance meter, where
their posture,
if you knock them, right, if you knock them off balance, then you can end the fight immediately by just, you know, running in for a quick stab. And so, you know, this idea of being more fragile, of having multiple ways to target and take down an enemy. And so in most cases, severing an opponent's limb or their head or whatever would probably end a match, or if they do keep on fighting, then it would be severely handicapped. And so, you know, in boss fights, obviously you can kind of shape the progression of the boss fight as you target certain limbs, but in most cases, it's kind of like, gosh, there's a fighting game. Is it Samurai Showdown? That is, that the rounds are supposed to be very quick and you're only supposed to land like one or two decisive hits. And it's all about like making that one strike to begin with instead of trading blows the entire time. Anyways, I'm talking too much for the pitch portion of the show. So let's go ahead and start the clock and see where that takes us.
I think to answer your question, I believe Samurai Showdown is the game you're talking about. This coming off of the last pitch makes so much sense to me. I love the idea of having sort of the, I've been playing Sekiro, and I shouldn't say I've been playing Sekiro, I've been smashing my head against the wall.
Sekiro's been playing you.
Yeah, Sekiro's been playing me. And like as I'm kind of right up against it, I'm thinking, wow, the more interesting mechanics to me in Sekiro is the resurrection mechanic, and I didn't, I'm sure there's going to be consequences for me using it at all.
But I wouldn't worry about it.
Yeah, exactly. It'll handle me at some other point. But what I like about the resurrection mechanic, and maybe tying it into your pitch here, is to take it and use it as an ability of like, you're crawling on the ground or you have a limb cut off. And if a battlefield actually, like if there was a lot of enemy characters, it was a little bit more forgiving than your sort of Sekiros of the world, then you can do something where you could like climb over a dead body and like pick up its severed leg or whatever and attach it to you as like a pseudo resurrection.
One of the interesting things about Sekiro is that it doesn't do the typical Dark Souls Bloodborne like regaining souls after you die by returning to where you drop them, which is interesting. There is kind of another mechanic in there that operates on random chance as to whether your souls essentially will be restored to yourself after you die, but it's different enough to where it feels like you have to be kind of emotionally prepared to lose everything or to lose half of your stuff every time you die, because you can't count on that mechanic coming through for you. And so this kind of feeling of finality, and you know, there's I think there's something to that. If we choose to, like, we can choose to give up a fight at any time, kind of like in Sekiro. And, you know, maybe as we lose limbs, they aren't necessarily fatal, but they do start, as we bleed out, we start losing our main health source. We can either choose to retreat at that point. We can choose to come back and keep fighting, but we are severely underpowered at that point. But, you know, if the boss just needs a couple more hits, it might be worth it to get in there and make those hits.
It would be kind of interesting to me if you could attach like organic limbs to yourself, but your body would reject them eventually.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
You would kind of like, they would rot off, like they would just continuously lose effectiveness. And so you're kind of always killing people and trying to like find enough time to, maybe it's as quick as like applying a first aid kit or something, and you know, one of your shooters of choice, but you get down and you have to quickly like be replacing your limbs all the time as you're barreling towards. And then you could even do story beats where your character is dying faster and faster, and the rate of which you have to replace the limbs becomes more extreme.
So let's say after you lose a limb, that's essentially like the equivalent of losing a life in Sekiro, so to speak. You are encouraged to retreat and to find a safe place where you can maybe craft a replacement limb.
Dare I say farm?
it takes some time, but if you make one out of wood, then you're okay to keep on going. It kind of seals off the wound you have. You've taken a hit to your overall health because you have less human parts to risk in the first place, and that limb becomes less of a target. You know, you are kind of always trying to protect your head, which is the spot where like real fatal damage can be done.
Yeah.
But it at least gives you like something to work with. It stops the bleeding, and so you're not constantly losing health. But if you're really in a pinch, then you could kind of use your magic to very quickly attach an enemy limb, which has a series of drawbacks. It could serve as like a slow poison effect. It could disobey you at times. It could, you know, actively work against you in certain ways. And so having that be the quick solution that you are punished for overly relying upon, but if you really need it in a pinch, it's there. And that could be interesting as well.
It could actually even feel like sucking the money or whatever towards you in Sekiro, where you just squirt, blap, 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 and then your limbs get attached.
Yeah. You get this like venom symbiote type of effect of it all kind of like fusing together.
Cool. Yeah, that's cool. Can it be a little bit easier? Just a little bit easier than Sekiro, please.
Yeah, I'm down for that.
Okay, thank you.
I like that this idea gives you, I feel like it gives you more freedom than it does in Sekiro. Sekiro is all about kind of like master this very specific skill. There's not really a lot of workarounds if you ever stuck or if you ever aren't good at one particular aspect of it.
I think it's a really cool way to do the sort of Metroidvania like experience of like being able to provide a power right when you need it. So right. Like being able to, whether it gives you a combo that a particular bad guy can throw or access to a bad guy weapon that they're just able to hold and wield in a way that you're not able to, you can kind of make those upgrades available to the player in real time as they need it.
That's right. Another aspect of this that would be really exciting to take on, either as a way to make it easier or harder, you know, depending on the situation, is, you know, boss fights obviously are where this system is going to be tested most of all. And maybe you are able to mid-fight attach severed enemy parts to yourself. If you lost your right leg, you target the boss's right leg and, you know, that can attach to you. Then all of a sudden you have some of the power of the boss at your disposal. But again, you know, as it disobeys or as it has these negative side effects, that is an even stronger effect. And so, you know, the boss fight really becomes, when it gets really desperate, it becomes this struggle between not only you and the boss, but also whatever of those superpowered but unpredictable and uncontrollable parts that you've attached to yourself.
I love the idea, too, of the, you know, giving speedrunners or people who want that extra level of challenge the remain whole run. Where they're just trying to save themselves the whole time. But, or maybe if one of your original limbs, like you could get it severed and if you could always reattach one of your original limbs. But if you do that, or if it falls off rather, it kind of also will expire. So you have to get back to it in a certain period of time. So it almost gives you this shot clock, right? Of if you're in the middle of a battle, like I actually need to go back and get my original limb, even though I'm enjoying this power up that the boss has given me. And maybe that gives some bosses the ability to reattach their own limbs too.
Now that's interesting. I like that part of it. I'm going to push against the original aspect though, because if you lost a limb, then it would be like right under you. And if attaching organic limbs is like the equivalent of kind of an instant fix, then there's no reason to really engage with any of the more challenging and creative mechanics. So, you know, maybe limbs are corrupted when they detach, maybe they dissolve or something, but I think that would I think that would make it too easy, and there would be no reason to do either of the other alternatives.
Hey, when you're right, you're right.
Well, and then if once you're at a bonfire, then maybe you could restore like everything. You are a full human again. And so that makes finding those bonfires exciting. And I want this to be, you know, I want you to be always kind of exploring new options and coming across new control schemes and new power sets and stuff. But I always want you to feel most normal and most at home with the regular human self, because then you have something to compare everything else to. So, you know, just as a way of like setting the baseline, making sure that players spend most of their time as themselves, and then they'll kind of understand and find the joy of all of these different move sets along the way.
Totally. I know we're coming up against it, but one mm-hmm. last thought, because I'm loving this idea, is this would be a great excuse to have one of those Souls games or a Sekiro-like game set in a sort of futuristic time period where there is that kind of crazy technology that would allow someone to do that, or you can bring in alien stuff. And I love the idea of you have a laboratory where you can regrow limbs, but it actually is like cloning machines and it takes minutes and hours or whatever to regrow. Mm. So you're always queuing up new limbs that you think you might need.
That's cool. Yeah, and that could be like a long-term upgrade type of solution.
Yeah, big surprise that I brought some factory sim into this thing, but there you have it.
Yeah, it's neat. I like it. Well, as you said, let's close it down. We are out of time on that one. I have a silly name that I just came up with off the top of my head.
But this is such a good idea. Don't make it too silly.
Well, you could always reject it. That's fine.
Okay, wow. All right.
But what I was thinking was Akimbo Elbows Die Twice.
Pretty good.
Very silly.
Hey, we would have two Japanese games on the shelf today. I'm okay with it. Is there any other second thought that you had?
I mean, it would just be like Arm Souls or something.
Well, then the first title is definitely better. Akimbo, okay. Elbows Die Twice.
Very silly. I like it. All right. We're going now to the community to see what y'all have come up with this week. And we have a pitch from our friend Octorock385, who says, I've had this idea rattling around for a while now. Picture a dungeon crawler that takes place in a futuristic sci-fi setting. You explore this twisting labyrinth with a giant planet that seems to be made of junk and scrap, battling monsters and salvaging resources as you go. The more you battle, the more you develop your character and party, but you can choose the wealth and resources you acquire to construct your own dungeon, using the rarer finds to add traps, events, or special monsters. The clincher for the whole thing is that you would have access to other people's dungeons, which would reward the player with extra experience and treasure. As you play, you learn the whole junk ball planet is like Swiss cheese because of the tunnels everyone has been doing. I'm thinking the whole endeavor would be similar to Etrian Odyssey, with an emphasis on dense cartography, intensive maps, mixed with a player creation and sharing experience. It'd be like the Mario Maker of dungeon crawling. Love the show. Keep up the good work, everyone. Thank you very much. And we'll start the clock.
Octorock, thank you very much for writing in. This, I'm almost thinking, like, in my head, I'm trying to think about the digging mechanic, and my head starts thinking about Steam World Dig as, like, how this thing could feel. I haven't played Etrian Odyssey. Do you know much about it?
Yeah, so it is a 3D dungeon crawler, which is kind of an old, old genre of video games. There's not very many series that still remain these days. It was always kind of a niche thing, but it was like even before actual 3D graphics were a thing, there were these kind of first person Dungeons and Dragons based, you know, everything is a grid based system. You're in these hallways, you're always looking forward, you can choose to look to the side
and left and right, and enemies are right in front of you.
So if you play any of the Persona Q games or Etrian Odyssey or Severed.
Yeah, Severed is my like most contemporary, I think.
So the idea is that people are constructing their own dungeon while doing raids on other dungeons, which I really love that idea. I think that's cool. There's the dungeon delving, and then there's things that you do on the overworld, things that you can use to build up your character. But in a way of of creating a more kind of a more reflective experience, a more parallel experience of going dungeon delving to build up your dungeon. That's super cool. And I think one of the ideas that we've done before, I don't remember whether it was a listener or one of our ideas, apologies, listeners, if this was one of yours, was having your sword essentially be a dungeon that you can shrink down inside of, go inside, and then like do dungeon raids to, you know, unlock the hidden potential of your sword. And so that would be a way of kind of tying back the mechanics into this, into the primary thrust of the game. But I like the idea of, you know, this planet is being kind of cored on from all sides, and there are these kind of interlocking dungeons that multiple players have created. And, you know, it's just kind of the culture of this planet that that's what you do.
I really like that too. And one of the things that I think about, of course, I'm going to bring up one of my favorite games here again, Astroneer, no surprise. But one of the things that I think Astroneer does well that this game could also work off of is every planet, maybe there's multiple planets, right? But the planet itself has multiple sort of rings, almost like the age of a tree. And as you go into certain levels of depth, that's where you either gain the ability to place certain types of enemies, or that's where you're able to encounter new types of environments, which means new types of random spawns and all that sort of stuff. You kind of get that sort of, and of course, increasing with difficulty the closer and the closer towards the core that you get. So as people are digging and making their own dungeons, you're kind of also ramping up the challenge for them as everybody's trying to get to the core of the planet, the center of the galaxy, whatever you want to call it.
So let's take a real kind of risk versus reward thing here. And let's say, and this is something that I know that I would hate in practice, but it reads really cleanly in this type of like theoretical setup, is let's say everybody has these dungeons because this is the way to get loot essentially, and to get weapons and riches and whatever you need is to create dungeons, lure people into them. You know, everyone has the understanding of what these dungeons are. And so you have these kind of Indiana Jones like setups where you're going inside, you're trying to get what the dungeon is trying to protect and escape with it. As you go into other people's dungeons and try to loot them, then you can either hold everything that you own on your person and risk losing it in the dungeon, or you could keep everything, you know, quote unquote, safe in your dungeon. There's no banks or anything. And so if you want to stockpile your trove and let it persist between deaths, then you have to, you know, find ways to protect it in your dungeon by burrowing deeper and deeper as you can afford more and more. It's kind of like the first Purge movie. It's like, you know, the rich people create these massive fortresses to try to protect themselves from everyone else. But that just makes those particular dungeons all the more alluring to try to get into.
Yeah, that's kind of cool. So what you're saying is you have to keep squirreling away any existing resources within the dungeons that you've created.
Yeah, because, you know, otherwise you would just be keeping them in your pockets. And then if you died on any of your dungeon runs, then you are SOL.
Yeah. Okay, so that's kind of cool. So it's almost like whatever's on you is on you. Maybe you really limit the inventory. You go sort of Minecraft style, and then everything essentially has to be stored up in chests or boxes. And when you're placing those in your dungeon, kind of anybody can take from them. One of the modifiers you could potentially do there too, I know you're saying it reads cleanly or whatever, I think one way to make it a little bit more forgiving is it could almost be a chest that enough people have to actually engage with. So it's not just like the first person that comes around. It's like it has, you know, five locks on it or whatever that people can pick. And as those attempts are made, you like lose more and more of the stuff in it. And then finally, the last person that gets in, or maybe all players get it. I guess that's kind of multiplying the economy, so that doesn't quite work, but it could.
Yeah, the only thing that I know that I would bounce off of if I played this game is just, you know, coming back after a couple months and finding out that everything that you worked towards is just gone and stolen by somebody else. And the fact that
right.
more powerful players can pretty much pretty cleanly run through other people's like lesser powerful dungeons without much trouble at all and just take everything that they want from the newer players or the players that are less experienced. And I don't know, it just kind of creates a hostile atmosphere.
Well, I mean, one potential possibility here, and I don't know if this goes against what Octorok was trying to pitch, but we don't necessarily have to make the players more and more powerful, right?
That's true, like, yeah.
We could make the scale of the players relatively flat. It would almost feel like roguelike in a way. You're making your own roguelike mm-hmm. dungeons. And then if that's true, then like you, the player, without wanting people to take your stuff, are incentivized to put your stuff in like hard to get places. Right. So
right.
whether once you clear a dungeon clear a dungeon or set up your own dungeon, like all the enemies inside of it essentially spawn and then you. Or once you're done setting it up, all the enemies spawn and then you find yourself in a Mario Maker like situation where you kind of have to beat your own dungeon to lock it in and commit it to the world. And then you're placing your chest. You're like, okay, this is going to be through a giant corridor of a ton of people. Hopefully nobody can kill their way to this chest. If they can, and if enough people can, then I'm going to lose all the stuff in it. But you also, it's kind of going to automatically store all items where the players with the highest skill level can extract them.
I do want to reference there is a series of games called Orcs Must Die that is kind of this type of thing that is about building dungeons with traps and everything. And that is specifically, it's not necessarily a PvP, although you might be able to do PvP through it, but it's mostly kind of a horde mode type thing where your fort is going to be invaded, and so you have to line the hallways with traps. And it's kind of like a tower defense-y type of thing, but in a kind of fantasy setup. There's a few other games like that. I remember some kind of anime-looking ones where you can set up like torture devices in your dungeon and try to trick heroes into, but I don't remember what they're called, so it's not helpful. But yeah, it would be cool to kind of take this idea and make it into a kind of bigger PvP or an MMO type of setup.
Totally. Totally. Yeah. And I like the idea of maybe there's some way to the act of having to commit the dungeon. Like you should not just be able to kind of go crazy because maybe just doing whatever you want, the world will be filled up very fast, but you have to kind of do dungeons and complete them and then get, then you're able to kind of submit them for locking in or what have you to get the stuff going and have it be part of everybody else's game. Or I guess you could just server people out and instance them, but I think it's a little bit more interesting to put some work into it, some sweat equity.
Very cool. Well, that's all the time we have on that one. So let's close it down. Let's come up with a name. I don't know why this is jumping out, but I was thinking, you know, if all of these dungeons could have like wildly varying aesthetic themes to them, would be a lot of fun. And so I was looking up at my set of posters that I have that came with the Mystery Science Theater 3000 box sets. And I have one here called The Robot versus the Aztec Mummy, which would be kind of a fun, like, you know, setup if there were such wildly divergent themes. But I don't know. I'm not married to it.
The Robot versus the Aztec Mummy is pretty cool. I love the idea of, yeah, like you said, highlighting the wild variations. I don't know if it's like what's that word when somebody has like, they like all sorts of different things.
Not very eclectic.
Eclectic, yeah. Maybe there's something with a eclectic dungeons or something like that.
Eclocked up. What?
See, I was going to actually go back to his similar to and say Eclectic Odyssey.
I like that. That's funny. That's a good one.
it's just a little silly enough to work.
Well, let's go for that then. Eclectic Odyssey takes us into this Etrian realm. That's it for us today. If you would like to submit a pitch for a future show, then please do. You can email us, playwrightcast@gmail.com. You can go to our website, playwrightcast.com/pitch, or you can tweet us at playwrightcast.
Special thank you to Protodome for the use of our theme song Hello World off the album Blue Noise. And thank you to our Kane and Rince podcasting network with great shows like The Kane and Rince Show. That's right, where they review and log for
Kane
video
and
Rince
Show.
The Kane and Rince Show. Yeah, they're going to change the intro to just be that soundbite. The Kane and Rince Show, starring. insert your names in audio. Sound of Play, where Leon or H here are going through great video game music, and that also has composers and stuff that come on and wonderful insight with them, and they share some of their favorite music and their original works. And of course, the Sausage Factory, where they interview real game developers. It's really amazing, you guys. You should really go listen to it because it's hopefully a lot less of the Anthem story over and over again. And it's a lot more fun and interesting sort of tidbits about game design. And
well, why don't we take us out of the show today with a miniature pitch? Q, what do you want to leave us with?
A game where you play a thief who always has to escape their heists through a rooftop chase.
All right. And we'll see you next week.
Bye.